This is The Immigration Conversation, presented by Fragomen, a series of talks and discussions by leading immigration lawyers and professionals from around the world. We'll bring you the most up-to-date business immigration news, issues of concern, and strategies in the world of global immigration and mobility.
Hello, everybody. My name is Scott Lieb, and I'm the corporate lead for knowledge at Fragomen. Welcome to the first in a series of episodes looking at immigration trends and themes. You know, it really goes without saying that much has changed in the world over the past 6 months. The COVID-19 pandemic has fundamentally altered the way people in countries all over the world interact, travel, and work. And it's had a profound impact on government thinking and policy, as well as the mobility of employees around the world. Now, in an effort to keep you updated of events and their implications in this constantly changing environment, Fragomen has published a quarterly supplement to its annual report that looks at the changes, looks at key drivers and themes, and really tries to analyze them through the lens of political, economic, cultural, and technological factors. And also, we try to offer some insights into what to expect for the rest of 2020 and beyond. Now, today I have with me several colleagues from around the globe to help make sense, to discuss some of these trends that are impacting the region. Murtaza Khan, who's the managing partner for Africa and the Middle East, he's based in the UAE. Louise Haycock, a partner in our London office, and Parisa Karamet, a partner in our New York office. Thanks to the three of you for joining me. Now, in looking at this report, one of the key trends we really see is globally is digital transformation. Governments moving to online processes, but also workers adapting to virtual offices as this work from home, work from anywhere trend gains increasing traction. So let's begin there. Can anyone comment on what they're seeing in their region?
Sure, Scott. Happy to offer some comments. This is Murtaza Khan from the Dubai office. And particularly because the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council countries, have really over the past decade or so invested heavily in digital government. What we've seen that as a result, that's really accelerated the digitization of immigration processes quite significantly. And it's an effort really led by countries such as the UAE, Qatar, or Saudi Arabia. And what they've typically done is at a national level, integrated their platforms that connect various ministries or departments that are involved in the immigration process through a centralized identity platform where all these several departments such as the Labor Department, Immigration, Health, and various others connect into it. And an example of that during the pandemic, these countries were really able to leverage all of this investment and technology to their benefit. So for example, residence permit renewals in the UAE could be conducted, without having to undertake any medicals and without having to physically stamp passports. For those that were out of the country, automatic extensions were granted, and the authorities just implemented that, systemically, and created a digital version of the residence permit with barcodes on it, so that in place of the physical sticker, people could take that to the airport when the flights opened, and present that at the airlines to show that they were still within their validity period. All of this was done relatively quickly with a higher degree of effectiveness as well. So it really demonstrated the resilience of government immigration operations to support continuity due to the widespread digitization efforts of the past. And it gave them a number of tools to really rapidly implement all these processes and policy changes as well. What's also interesting has been the creation of virtual labor market pools in the UAE and Bahrain in particular. So for those foreign nationals that were impacted by loss of employment, the ministries of labor in both these countries have essentially created a requirement for employers to place them on this virtual labor market pool, if you like, where employers that on the other side are recruiting could actually draw on this talent or these individuals. So this is very interesting because, you know, normally labor market testing focuses on local nationals of the country. And here we had governments using technology to support a process for foreign workers to be hired through those labor market platforms that they created. So obviously this was, you know, partially also due to the understanding that foreign workers could not be brought from outside due to, you know, flight suspensions or travel closures. But at the same time, it would afford the opportunity to the foreign nationals that were impacted adversely by job losses and also to retain that talent in the country ultimately. So governments in the region are you know, actively reviewing and further conducting research programs to look at how digitization and online platforms can bridge, you know, this everlasting skills gap, particularly in light of what's emerging as the technology-led disruption and future of work agenda. So it is a continuous process. And you know, an example of that is the establishment of the Dubai Futures Foundation, the Future Foundation a few years ago, which, you know, solely tasked with imagining the future and looking at technology and platforms that speak to the future. So quite an exciting place to be in that sense.
Great. Thanks, Murtaza. I appreciate it. Well, you know, as you look at the landscape, as we said, COVID-19, it's been, 24/7 from a news cycle, and it's dominated and shaped the immigration landscape these past 6 months or so. But to some sense, it's overshadowed some of the immigration discussions that have been taking place. And, there's long-term changes that were put in motion well ahead of 2020. We've seen some of these exacerbated by the pandemic, but others have sort of, receded into the backdrop. But, you know, what really strikes me is there's this little thing called Brexit that dominated the news in 2019. And now as the deadline looms, it's slowly making its way back into the headlines. Louise, I know you're at ground zero of this in London. And I was wondering if you could just talk a bit about that with the deadline coming up, what we can expect to see in the near term, some of the dynamics taking place, and then what we could possibly see longer term.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. And you're quite right. You know, at the start of the year, we really expected 2020 to be absolutely dominated by Brexit planning. But of course, the pandemic came along and quite understandably, attentions were diverted elsewhere. But now, with less than 4 months to go to the end of the transition period, we're really starting to see that focus back on planning for a post-Brexit world. So just as a reminder, the UK left the EU at the end of January under the terms of the withdrawal agreement. And that meant that there was a transition period in place until the end of this year. So really ensuring that the UK leaves in an orderly fashion. Now, this means that the free movement, which allows UK nationals to work in Europe and vice versa, remains in place until the end of that period. So broadly speaking, anyone who relocates on or before the 31st of December 2020 would have their rights protected, although they might need to submit an application to evidence that status. Now, in a world post-Brexit, companies in the UK will no longer be able to rely on free movement to employ Europeans who arrive after that transition period. And instead, they're going to need to obtain work permission. The same, of course, is true for companies in Europe who would need to apply for work permission for Brits who arrive after the end of the transition period. But obviously, as they're a block of 27 countries plus the EEA and Switzerland, the impact of the labour source is far less dramatic. Just a further note that none of this applies to Irish nationals, and they're not required to do anything. They retain their ability to live and work in the UK even post the transition period. But where does that leave us in terms of trends, I guess, is the most pressing question. So businesses are really busy planning, and really that planning can be divided into two. So first of all, they're helping their current populations, so the UK nationals in Europe or vice versa. And that might be through directing them to make any required application. So, for example, the EU settlement scheme in the UK. And they might be providing lots of support, such as guides or access to certain information. But secondly, and this is probably more of the current focus, they're looking at how they plan for a post-Brexit world. Now, in the UK, there's going to be a new immigration system, which interestingly is more generous than the system that's currently in place, because the skill level and the salary threshold are both going to be reduced. So perhaps that's bucking the trend of regimes becoming more restrictive. But however good this new immigration regime may be, it's going to be slower and it's going to be more expensive than free movement, and the labour supply will reduce. So businesses are workforce planning and they're assessing the extent to what extent the new regime is going to make it easier, harder or more expensive to recruit. And then they're looking at how they're going to mitigate that impact. So that could be through headcount planning, so moving people earlier to take advantage of free movement, but also looking at longer term strategies such as automation or retention or moving work out even out of the UK. We've actually recently conducted a benchmarking survey of over 500 UK-based companies. And interestingly, we found that only 20% of those companies had completed that workforce planning analysis. So we really hope and expect to see that shift during the autumn, and companies really looking to assess the impact and the cost of those new policies. Now, in Europe, businesses are planning for UK nationals to become third country nationals and requiring work permission for those who don't already reside there. But they're also dealing with other impacts, such as how to deal with cross-border workers or business travellers who might actually think they're business travelling, but their activities actually amount to work. They're also looking at social security. And as those rules will vary on a country-to-country basis, mapping those changes and the requirements in each jurisdiction is really quite challenging. But the question that I get asked probably most frequently is, with all that's going on in the world, won't the transition period be extended and sort of give us all a bit of a break? But actually, the deadline to extend the transition period has already passed. And actually, with COVID-19 and all of the corresponding economic impact, it's really made the UK government even more keen to press ahead with ending free movement immediately to restrict migration. And really, that's going to help the UK government as unemployment rises and it looks to protect the resident labour market.
Thanks, Louise. So, right. Protectionism is another major immigration theme addressed in this report, and it's one we have seen for some time. But it really seems to have intensified as the pandemic has spread. And what we mean by that is movement towards more nationalistic policies like what you've described, Louise. We seem to be seeing this emerge across the globe in one form or another.
Scott, let me jump in from the U.S. perspective, because certainly protectionism has been a major theme of the Trump administration since the early days of the election in 2016. So starting in January 2017, the Trump administration issued a series of executive orders that really focused on immigration. And the overarching theme of the last 3.5 years of the Trump administration can best be characterized as restrictionist, really in every way, both in terms of immigration in general, but even with regard to high-skilled immigration. And that is particularly true of the recent months since the onset of the pandemic. So, stepping back, starting in March, there were a series of travel bans that were issued by the administration, ostensibly with respect to protecting the United States regarding COVID-19 and its spread, but also with a very specific focus on protecting the U.S. market and workforce from the economic consequences of COVID-19. So it's a very interesting time because not only do we have the pandemic and its economic impact and the protectionist steps that the administration continues to take with regard to that, but we also have in less than 8 weeks the presidential election, which is critical in many ways in terms of determining the future of the United States, but particularly when it comes to immigration and how things will continue under a Biden administration, assuming there is a change, which of course we don't know. So starting in March, the Trump administration began issuing a series of travel bans, the first of which was very much focused on geography, that is banning travelers with a few exceptions, including U.S. citizens and green card holders and their family members, but effectively banning travelers coming in from greater Europe, the United Kingdom, Iran, China, and then later Brazil was added to that list. Not long after that, in April, the administration issued an immigrant visa travel ban barring the initial entry of individuals who were concluding the green card process overseas and effectively limiting their ability to enter the United States as immigrants, initially for a period of 60 days, but that was later extended through the end of the year. As part of that April 23rd travel ban, the executive branch directed relevant government agencies, including the Department of Labor and the Department of Homeland Security, to review steps that should be taken in order to protect the U.S. workforce. And what we saw flow from that was the June 24th travel ban, which was aimed specifically at limiting certain high-skilled worker visa categories in terms of their ability to enter the United States. And those included, or include rather, because it's ongoing until the end of the year, individuals seeking to enter an H-1B, L-1, and certain J-1 statuses. So there are exceptions in place for all of these travel bans, and there is, in fact, a national interest exception in particular, which can be applied for and may be granted by U.S. consulate overseas. But the net effect of these travel bans is, in fact, to stem the flow of high-skilled workers into the United States. So in addition to the travel bans, it's also important to know that the administration is really focused on limiting and creating greater hurdles and challenges to specific visa categories, including the H-1B visa category. And in fact, we understand that the final rule on H-1Bs, which would in fact redefine an H-1B worker, create additional limitations and restrictions for H-1B workers, is currently at the Office of Management and Budget, otherwise known as OMB. And it would be released as an interim final rule, which means that it would take effect upon publication, really with no notice to the public to comment on its impact. So although there may not be notice and opportunity to comment, and that could create avenues for litigation to slow implementation of the rule, it's important to understand that the overall impact here of what we're seeing is restrictionism of probably the most commonly used category for high-skilled worker immigration in the United States. So it should be interesting to see what this rule says. It will be issued imminently. And there's no question that the administration will continue for the remainder of the year to focus on limiting high-skilled immigrations and green card issuance wherever possible. Now, in reviewing the Biden and Trump campaign promises when it comes to immigration, it's not so clear that a change in administration would really alter the course of protectionism that we're seeing in the immigration area. In fact, it would appear that a Biden administration may continue with some of these restrictive types of measures that we've seen during the Trump administration, simply because it's a reaction to, you know, what appears to be a struggling economy and job losses in the United States. So stay tuned for sure, but it will be interesting to see the outcome of the election and how much it will alter, if at all, what we're seeing here in the United States in terms of the protectionist landscape.
Thanks, Parisa. As you said, indeed, interesting times. Well, thank you, everybody, for that quick global tour. I appreciate your comments and insights. If you do not already have a copy of the World Immigration Trends Report and would like to get one, please visit our website at fragment.com/insights. Also, feel free to contact your Fragment professional for a more in-depth discussion on how these trends affect your specific business or businesses. And please keep an eye out for our new trends report, which is coming out in October. Thank you, and we look forward to chatting with you again in a couple of months.
The Immigration Conversation podcast is presented by Fragment, the leading firm dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide. To stay updated on the most current trends and services worldwide, visit our website at www.fragment.com for the latest podcast episode. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is current as of the date of publication. This podcast does not constitute legal advice or give rise to an attorney-client relationship between any viewer and our firm. If you have any questions, please contact the global immigration professional with whom you work at Fragment.